Nah, not those Lions. Three Lions we can get behind.
And he hoofed it.
There's more pressure being ratcheted up with a loss like that, of course.
Just getting the head boxed off, should that just kind of happen.
For all your Lions coverage this summer, download the OTB Sports app.
The OTB Podcast Network with Gets At Go. Black Box Car Insurance lets young drivers bounce past high-cost premiums. Drive safe and save more with GetsAtGo.ie.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power's Save Our Game. Donating at least 100,000 to Irish football via England Goals this summer. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Morning and you're welcome along to yet another episode of the Euro 2020 show here on Off the Ball. Shane Hannan with you throughout the duration of the European Championships on weekdays when there are matches on. We're live in all of the usual places, as we are every single weekday morning. We're live on the OTB Sports radio station. That's on the OTB Sports app. You can download that for free right now if you haven't already in the App Store or the Play Store. We're live on video as well. We're streaming right now, youtube.com/offtheball, on Facebook as well, and indeed on Twitter at Off the Ball. And as usual, our OTB Sports Euro 2020 show is live with Paddy Power's Save Our Game, donating €10,000 to Irish football for every goal England scored at the Euros. So €20,000 in the kitty so far after Raheem Sterling's two goals in the tournament. They have a chance, of course, to add to that tally tonight when they take on Germany at Wembley in the round of 16 of the European Championships. So what a night we have ahead of us, and what a night we had last night as well. Over the coming couple of weeks that remain in the tournament, I'll be joined by plenty of Euros legends, football insiders, journalists as well, as we preview that day's games, look back on the games the night before as well. Karen Duggan, the former Republic of Ireland international and current Piemont United midfielder, will join us on the show very shortly this morning. And as usual, it's a time for a member of Team Off the Ball and a second appearance on the Euro 2020 show this morning for Mr. Offaly, Will O'Callaghan. Morning, Will.
Shane Hannan, how are you? We couldn't have picked a better morning to chat about the night that's gone before. Like, absolutely breathless. Got a few hours sleep and then got back up and started thinking about the sheer standard of European Championships football that we got yesterday. And I reckon that was probably the best day of tournament football that I've ever watched in my life. I'm too young to remember the semi-finals of World Cup 1990, which I think was the argument that they were just breathtaking as well. But yesterday was incredible. Like, we got 14 goals across the two games. We got a penalty shootout. We got the world champions being knocked out. We got to see both sides of Spain. We got a final virtuoso appearance from Luka Modric in what's likely his last Euros. I'm not sure how we fit all this into an hour before we look at the minnows in England trying to win their second ever knockout game at a European Championships tonight. So really, really looking forward to this next hour or so of football chat, because the football gods blessed us last night, Shane.
Oh, we could have done with an extension to today's show without a shadow of a doubt. Like, I was sitting there last night, Will, and like, I drove home. I spent 4 hours in the car, so I'm driving up and down from Monaghan at the moment, but got home and said, right, I'm going to have a nap. But then 5 o'clock came and I said, no, I'm not going to have a nap. I'm going to start watching Spain and Croatia. And then I just sat on the couch right up until 11 o'clock when that penalty shootout ended last night. It was just, I mean, 240 minutes of pure football porn. It was absolutely extraordinary to watch. Like, it started with the own goal in the Spain-Croatia game from Unai Simon. And then from that point forward, everything happened. Like, two late 3-1 deficits cut back. And just, I don't even know where to start. Like, what was your moment of the night?
For me, Shane, I think a lesson was learned yesterday, because there were various times where I thought, you know, France, when they went ahead, and particularly after the Pogba goal, it seemed that there's no way back for the Swiss. And you thought, there's no way this can happen, particularly after what had occurred in the last 7 minutes of the match earlier in the day between Spain and Croatia. But the key is, watch these matches right up until the very last second, because if you're going to watch Sweden and Ukraine this evening, it mightn't seem the most attractive one at Hampden. But yet we could well have drama well laid into the game. That's what last night should have taught us. The thing for me, Shane, was we haven't had a huge amount of goals in some of the games so far in the tournament. Spain particularly weren't scoring them. And now they've scored 11 in their last three games. And they just let loose at different times yesterday. We got to see managerial mistakes when teams were sitting on the lead. Like, I couldn't believe that Luis Enrique decided to switch his centre-backs around at a time when Croatia were getting dangerous when they pressed up and started putting crosses into the box. And then they took Gaia off and put Jordi Alba on, which even seemed to encourage Croatia to go even further forward. And in Deschamps' case, I couldn't understand taking off Anton Griezmann to bring on Sissoko at the time he came in. I couldn't believe an hour away from kickoff that France, for the first time really since the warm-ups ahead of the Euros, they were going back to three at the back. A change in formation, which was maybe disrespectful to Switzerland, and bringing in Clement Longuet, who's not very good at defending headers, against Savarovic, who is very good, as we saw, at heading the ball. there was just so much going on. And then the frantic finishes in both games, where once Switzerland had scored their third goal, you were wondering if there was going to be time after kickoff for them to go up and grab a winner. And similarly, Croatia finishing the game so strongly against Spain. It was, I think, that element of danger where, you know, two of the favourites of the competition could well have gone out. And now we know that the world champions are gone, the defending European champions are gone, and it becomes incredibly difficult to pick a winner, particularly when you look at Belgium's injuries to Kevin De Bruyne and to Eden Hazard. They're now technically, I think, the bookmakers' favourites narrowly at this stage. And England, I joked about it, about the fact that they've only ever won one knockout game at the European Championships, and that was Spain back in 1996. England are now the second favourites to win the tournament, probably because of how difficult they are to beat at Wembley. But now, and I didn't mean it as a cliche when we were previewing the tournament on the very first show, it looks so wide open going into the quarterfinals this weekend.
Yeah, like I expected, a lot of people expected kind of cagey, maybe tight affairs in the knockout stages in this tournament, and teams kind of holding back a little bit. But I mean, what we saw last night was just incredible. And like I actually mentioned it to Damien Delaney yesterday, that I'd heard the rumours in the French media that Deschamps was going to go with this three at the back, try out the 3-5-2, and like I put it to Damien that, you know, it could be quite a risky thing to change formation in the middle of a tournament, and I don't think they'd tried that formation in a couple of years. So as it turned out, it's not really a great thing to do mid-tournament. And look, there's rumours that England are going to go three at the back tonight against the Germans, and that would be another risky manoeuvre, but maybe it'll go better for England. I think, like, Roy Keane put it best after the match last night, Will, and he said, this is why it's the greatest game on the planet. Like, it reminded me of that day, the World Snooker semi-finals had an extraordinary day a couple of years ago when Sullivan played Selby and McGill beat Karen Wilson, and it was just this incredible day of sporting action. Last night was potentially the best day of sport in one particular sport that I've ever seen.
Yeah, look, in a way, Roy Keane is absolutely right. Like, park all the tactics that we're going to be talking about over the next while, and we've an incredible tactical brain coming on with us to Cara Duggan in a few minutes. Just embrace the sheer drama of what happened, because both games should have been dead, and they weren't. And the teams who were underdogs came back into the match. Like, the three at the back thing is interesting, because I can understand England going three at the back, because they've played that quite a bit over the last couple of seasons under Gareth Southgate. I actually thought that they were going to go three at the back from the start of the tournament, and it would have made perfect sense, because Kyle Walker at club level oftentimes tucks in as a third centre-back anyway, if that's the system that's rumoured for tonight. In France's case, they have played it very infrequently under Didier Deschamps, particularly since 2018. I think it's only three or four fixtures where they've gone three at the back. And remember that when you're going three at the back, it's fine if you've got two fullbacks who are going to push up and down throughout the game. And if you've got, say, like Germany's options, where you've got Kimmich and Gosens who are going to be flying up the two wings, you give yourself that bit of extra protection if you're England going into tonight. But the simple fact is that France were having to play Rabiot out of position at left back because of the injury to Luka Dinia. And then you really start to wonder, would they have been better off, if they were thinking going three at the back, to have Upamecano? Would they have been better off to have Theo Hernandez in their squad if they were intending to play this way? It's almost like Deschamps outthought himself a little bit, because in attack they look really narrow. Now, not that that mattered when you had, like, that Karim Benzema goal, just thinking about it, Shane. Like, the first touch, it was almost like an NBA skill to put it through the legs, and it combined the finesse of the Bergkamp touch.
I still don't know what he did. I don't know what he did. Like, I've seen the replay like three or four times. I still don't know how he did what he did.
Like, it was the most efficient thing possible, because he took the shortest route towards getting a shot at goal. But the skill level to actually pull that off is just remarkable. And you can see how confused the Swiss defenders were when Benzema finds himself in half a yard of space after the touch that he took. And what was great was he didn't fluff the shot afterwards, because you can imagine if this is this wonderful touch to set up the chance, and then Benzema blazes it over when he gets a rush of blood afterwards. It was a clinical finish on top of that. And of the decisions that Deschamps made, bringing Benzema in was a very good decision, as it worked out. You know, he added a bit to the attack which maybe wasn't seen from Kylian Mbappe and from Griezmann. And I know I mentioned that bringing off Griezmann and bringing Sissoko on took away an attacking outlet for France when it came to extra time, and ultimately that may well be seen as an error. But I didn't think Griezmann was having a particularly good tournament or even a particularly good night last night. We can argue the toss over Kylian Mbappe, who has not lit up the tournament in the way that people would have expected. We didn't get a type of performance like, say, the Nou Camp a few months ago in the Champions League knockout stages from Kylian Mbappe. But he was pretty central to everything that went well for France last night, and he was heavily involved in the chances that they created for the goals. And then who else but Paul Pogba would be involved in the equaliser, because his own goal was remarkable. One of the best goals of the tournament, where we've had a few good goals. Like, just his swagger and the fact that very few players take on chances from that far outside the box like Pogba did last night. And when he struck it, he had every confidence in his own ability that he was going to score. He's just a remarkable technical footballer. And then all credit, I think, to Switzerland, because the mistake goes down to Pogba because he gets caught in traffic and he probably should have known that he was going to get pressed and probably should have cleared it away. But I think credit to Switzerland late on in the game, a bit like Croatia, for having the bravery to push right up and to put players under pressure in dangerous positions. But once Pogba lost that ball, you could see that Kante was left exposed with the amount of players that he was trying to cover after the mistake. And, you know, Switzerland got themselves a deserved equaliser. And unfortunately for Pogba, who I think has been one of the best players of the tournament, and last night he was incredible, like up with Xhaka as the best player on the pitch, people will probably remember him for his mistake as much as they'll remember Kylian Mbappe's involvement in the game for the penalty that was saved.
Yeah, like Pogba and Benzema, certainly two of the bright sparks for France last night and across the tournament even. Like, I always enjoy the L'Équipe player ratings. We actually have the ratings from last night and they're often quite harsh. Benzema getting an 8 and Pogba getting a 6. So they actually came off quite okay. Hugo Lloris, of course, saving the penalty with
6
a 7.
6 is harsh on Pogba, Shane.
Like, it is harsh on Pogba.
Even by the L'Équipe standards, and you know, we had the editor of L'Équipe on OTBAM a few weeks ago, and he was mentioning the fact that they kind of have a base standard of 5. So if you play reasonably all right, you'll get a 5. If you play a bit better, you'll get a 6. So
Pogba deserves,
you
know, a 7.
For Benzema to get an 8, that's a 9 in most people's eyes. And even for Hugo Lloris, 7's a really good performance. But like, I would have had Paul Pogba realistically up towards an 8 as opposed to a 6.
Yeah, we might look at some of those ratings in the defence because they don't come across quite so well. So Raphael Varane, 3. Longley, you mentioned, 2. Preniel Kimpembe with a 2 as well. Benjamin Pavard with a 2. Just insulting. Pogba 6, Kante got a 5, Rabiot 5, Benzema 8, Griezmann 5, Mbappe 4. Like, to have 3 players get 2 out of 10 and 1 get 3 out of 10, that pretty much, look, might be harsh on France, but granted, they didn't show up for that first half. So, look, we'll get into that match a little bit more, Karen Duggan, very shortly. I just wanted to bring you as well, we had an Instagram poll up. Our producer, Dahi Boland, threw up an Instagram poll because of the England-Germany match tonight, just to gauge, in a curiosity sense, who the Irish people are going for in this match tonight. In fact, who they think will win and progress through to the last 8. England, 19%, and Germany, 81%, Will. Are you along those lines? Like, I fancy Germany to do the business tonight and to get through somehow. Could be on penalties, might be an extra time, but where do you see this game going?
Well, look, Germany have not lost to England at a tournament since, have a guess, Shane, when the last time they lost?
There was something on in 66, wasn't there? Did England do something that year? I can't remember.
I think there was a game of some meaning that happened at the same venue, which I'm sure we'll probably hear a million times in the coverage between 3 and 5 o'clock this afternoon. But since then, Germany haven't lost at a major finals against England, and they will go back and remember these players playing tonight when they were very young. They would have watched 1996 when Germany beat England in a European Championship semi-final to qualify for the final that they won against the Czech Republic and when they lifted the tournament. And you can't argue with the Germans' consistency when it comes to the European Championships. All right, they weren't at it at the World Cup in 2018, but Germany have reached the semi-finals at the last 3 runnings of these tournaments. And the thing is, Shane, whoever comes through tonight, and I'm with you, I'm starting to edge a little bit towards Germany in a coin toss of a game, but whoever gets through, there's such a nice route to the final, because the aforementioned Czechs await in Rome this weekend in a quarter final. And when you see the top teams are tumbling on the other side of the draw, you could come into a semi-final or a final very nicely if you're England or Germany. Like, England have to rely on the fact that they've been incredibly difficult to beat at England, incredibly difficult to beat at Wembley in England. Anywhere they play in England, they're hard to beat, but at Wembley particularly, they've got a tremendous record. But the evidence of how they've played so far in the tournament, can England raise their level beyond the way that they've played? Because even against the Czech Republic, when, you know, Grealish and Saka definitely added a lot to the lineup, you then have got 2 of your nailed-on starters for tonight in Chilwell and Mason Mount having to sit and isolate for over a week, and they only come out of isolation on Monday afternoon. So they will only have had very limited training time. Whatever at Chilwell, Mason Mount probably has to start in this system. Does Foden get a place back in the team? You know, Sterling, who's been a big favourite of Gareth Southgate, does he retain his place in the side? And then you look at the bluntness of Harry Kane so far. There's so many question marks about England, which probably weren't there on paper when we were previewing the tournament. Can you really see them actually up their game enough to get over one of the big teams in the competition? I think that's the real question about tonight, because, you know, Germany, while they haven't been brilliant, Shane, like, they still played some very good, efficient football in the second half against Portugal when it was required. And they eked out a result against Hungary on a day when they weren't playing particularly well in order to get to this stage of the competition. And I think, crucially, Thomas Muller, probably one of the most intelligent footballers when it comes to tight games and the knockout stages of international tournaments, is back from his knee injury. And Germany have also been boosted hugely by the fact that Rudiger and Ilkay Gundogan were both able to train yesterday after the knocks that they picked up in the last round. So Germany have got a full hand to pick from going into tonight. And I think they'll quite enjoy coming in as minor underdogs into a game against England, where I think they'll be fancying their chances of winning this and setting up the tournament very nicely for themselves.
Yeah, definitely a carrot at the end of the stick for whoever wins this match tonight. It's Sweden-Ukraine, isn't it, in the next round, and then the winner of Czech Republic-Denmark in the semi-final, which is just like as dreamy a quarter-final, semi-final lineup as you could possibly get. Granted, no easy games at this stage, but we'll get to Karen Duggan and get her thoughts on all of this now in just a second. But my team of the tournament, Will, my rolling All-Stars have been moving on. This was my team as of yesterday. So Courtois of Belgium and goals, back four of Dumfries for the Netherlands, Lindelof, Sweden, Vermaelen, Belgium, and Robin Gosens for Germany. Then the midfield four, Joshua Kimmich for Germany, Pogba for France, and Gini Wijnaldum of the Dutch in midfield with him, Emil Forsberg for Sweden out left, and then the top two, Patrick Schick of the Czech Republic and Cristiano Ronaldo for Portugal. I've made three changes, Will. So out comes Courtois in goals, and in comes Jan Sommer, the Swiss keeper, after his excellent display last night, and of course saving that penalty from Kylian Mbappe to see them through to the last eight as well. Gini Wijnaldum is out in place of Granit Xhaka. Look, he was impeccable in that game against France last night, and a passing clinic, I think it was referred to in commentary at one point, between himself and Pogba. Pogba keeping his place, rightly so in my opinion. Joshua Kimmich is out, and in comes Ferran Torres, the Spanish winger there. He had some he grew into the game very, very nicely. Tidy finish for the third goal, lovely cross for the second goal for them in that win over Croatia yesterday. So that's my team as things stand, Will, but no doubt plenty of changes between now and the end of the tournament. And
There's a few I'm surprised by, Shane, before we even start. You've been very harsh on the Belgians. I'm not sure if this is because they came through a very tight game against Portugal, which felt a lot more like a typical knockout game on Sunday night, but I'm shocked you don't have Romelu Lukaku starting in your team. I would have thought that Kevin De Bruyne would be worthy of a place in the team given the way he's played in the tournament. And where's Modric, who again was so, so good for Croatia, and it kind of went to ribbons for them when he was forced to go off yesterday. So how does Modric not get into your team?
Look, I love Modric as much as the next guy. And the man is, what, nearly 56 or something at this point? Like, he's just an incredible player. And yeah, he ran the show for Croatia in the last couple of games. I just felt Pogba deserved to be left in there. And even his penalty in the shootout was excellent. And Granit Xhaka, like, taking his country to a last eight in the Euros. It's tough to pick these players. Like, there's a few players, I think, that will feel a little bit like Romelu Lukaku, who's been in the team for quite some time. I took him out quite recently. He might get back in there if he scores against the Italians. And Courtois was in there. Vermaelen I have for Belgium in centre half. So maybe if Belgium keep progressing, keep winning this tournament, there'll just be 11 Belgians in the team.
Speaking of Italian, Shane, where's Locatelli and Spinazzola here? Like, Italy have been winning the hearts and minds of everybody. They were maybe not at their best on Sunday in eventually getting through, or on Saturday night, I should say, eventually getting through against Austria. But Locatelli has to get in there. I like Gosens as well, but where's Locatelli?
I had Locatelli, I had Berardi, I had all these guys, and then they rested all of their main men against Wales in the third group game, and I just said, no, you're all coming out, and then as they progress in the tournament, they'll all be eased back in. Now, I didn't expect the Austrians to push them so close, but they will be. They will reappear, Will. Don't worry. If they beat the Belgians.
Get Vermaelen out and put in Simon Kjær as well. There's a few changes. You need to just kind of
you're not happy.
Tailor this team a little bit.
Yeah, you're not happy. Time to welcome to the Euro 2020 show this morning the former Republic of Ireland international midfielder and Piemont United midfielder, the current Piemont player, Karen Duggan. Morning, Karen.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Keeping well, and I absolutely don't have a clue where to start here, Karen. What, like, were you like ourselves sitting on the couch just in complete awe and astonishment at what was happening last night?
Yeah, it was so nice just to see teams messing up at the back and throwing caution to the wind and giving us something to actually talk about that wasn't, oh, look, their tactical astuteness, they're hard to beat. It was just good to go and see teams topple over and crumble and give us a bit of drama that we were looking for in the knockout stages.
Like, when we might start on the French game, since it's quite fresh in our heads. Like, were you surprised to see the way Didier Deschamps set up this French team with the three at the back and kind of changing things in the middle of a tournament? Like, it was a risk that, I mean, by all accounts, has backfired.
Yeah, massive risk. It's not how you play tournament football. You play tournament football with with an approach. You come in and you have a defined approach. We see Gareth say, okay, he's going for a safe one. France just went out and they were like, oh, we have the players to beat anyone, and they did, but they took the foot off the gas and you're punished. And who would have thought we'd be sitting here talking about Granit Xhaka and the team of the tournament when it comes to quarter final stage? It's madness. It's the drama we wanted. And yeah, Deschamps will come in for criticism for that decision. They had the team to win that game. They were in cruise control. They didn't play particularly well. For half an hour they were scintillating, but other than that, it was a real contest, and they kind of walked themselves into that, and they did look vulnerable at the back. They looked exposed. You were hoping that Kante can be five people again, and that's just not the case. So it was great to see, to be honest.
Even Patrick Vieira on television afterwards was saying, look, the best team deserved to go to the next round, and tonight that was the Swiss. Like, do you agree that the best team ultimately went through?
Not really. I think France had been good to watch, and you always felt like the likes of Mbappe and Griezmann could have even stepped it up more. It was more to do with their shortcomings, possibly. But you have to hand it to the Swiss. They're a team that I covered them in the Wales match, and they were they're nothing to write home about. You were kind of thinking, oh, Wales should have kicked on and done better and gone at them a bit more. But here they are, we're still talking about them. Wales are long gone, and rightly so, because of the way they performed. But they put it up to the Swiss. But they got their tactics right. They hung in there, possibly looked at what Croatia did earlier in the day, and it just worked out better for them. They had the legs to keep going, and the French had the frailties that they could expose.
Karen, when it came to the way that the Swiss played as well, because a lot of focus is going to fall on France and their shortcomings, given the quality of team and quality of squad they have, they really should have been winning this tournament. But like, I think the Swiss have got a lot of credit, particularly for the way that they attacked in those last 5-6 minutes. And players like Zuber getting up and down the left-hand side, Granit Xhaka, who was playing clinical passes, which Arsenal fans will be wondering, why can't he do this week on week for them? Like, the Swiss, I thought, were really, really good in the closing stages of that match.
They were, and they're playing that kind of quick-moving clinical football that the Italians were doing as well, and it was actually really good to watch. Rather than waiting for that individual to kind of step up and do a bit of magic like Mbappe, they moved the ball really well, and they found the spaces, and that has been effective in this tournament. We're seeing that it's that kind of 1-2 play, quick, high-energy stuff is doing really well. So all credit to them for keeping going and doing that, and it's that Italian model as well. They're not dependent on a superstar to step up. It's very much the collective. You wouldn't really, apart from Xhaka, who are you putting in your team of the tournament so far? You wouldn't really pick out an individual, but they've dumped the French out, and they still have their Pogba in that team, possibly Benzema up there as well, did great for them, but at the end of the day they're out. So well done for those individuals, but at the end of the day it doesn't really mean anything when you're at the quarterfinal stage and you're world champions.
And I wonder for the Swiss as well whether they take a lot of heart from the way that they finish the game by getting those crosses in and being very dangerous, because Savarovic is a very good header of the ball. And then you look at the amount of goals that Spain have conceded from crosses, both from deep and also crosses from the byline. And again, when Croatia started whipping in crosses when they got forward in the second half of that game, Spain looked in a lot of trouble. The equaliser came from a header too. I wonder, will the Swiss be thinking, if they can get the ball from Spain this coming weekend, if they get the ball into the box, they're going to get chances?
I think so. I think we've seen a lot of teams struggle defensively under crosses. Portugal in particular against Germany, I think they conceded their 4 goals from crosses. So if you have someone with a good whip and you've got that marquee centre forward who can get up and cause these defenders who are more into playing ball than they're actually defending at this time, then there's always a chance, and it only takes a few whips into the box. You get enough pressure in, eventually you do kind of score. We saw that Croatia kept pushing yesterday, the Swiss kept pushing, and they got their just rewards. It didn't work out for Portugal because they probably had the wrong people in the box, when you do kind of invite that pressure and you do have a good header of the ball, there's always a chance.
Karen, like, when you look at the Kylian Mbappe, and he's someone who's been spoken about a lot during this tournament, probably because of the lack of what he's done. And it was that, look, he lit up the World Cup in Russia. We expected big things from him in this tournament. I think he was 41 goals maybe for club and country in the last year or so. So it's not like he came into this tournament in bad form, but really, really disappointed. And I mean, to look at the body language even after the missed penalty last night, and like Deschamps came over to him briefly. I didn't see many other French teammates coming over to console the poor guy, but clearly there's, I don't know if what the inside of the French camp is like. Do they get on? Do they not? But strange enough scenes after that last night.
Yeah, it's always kind of a question around the French, isn't it? Do they actually like each other? Is it for show on Instagram? Whereas with the Italians, you really believe that they do all love each other and that it's genuine when they're all clapping on each other's backs and hugging and kissing and all the rest of it. It was very interesting. Obviously, you've got some characters there who are kind of divisive. Your Benzema, obviously, he's brought back in and he's probably been their best player, but comes with baggage. Mbappe playing for PSG, the main man. There's a lot of main men in there, so maybe it was a bit of that, and maybe they thought they didn't have to work as hard as possible. I thought he could have worked a lot harder. I thought Pogba could have worked harder, even though he was excellent in attack. Really, really interesting. He didn't look as devastated as you would expect someone who had just missed a penalty. Mm. I would have expected a lot more devastation around. It kind of just seemed that they accepted that this was going to happen. I have to say, when it did go to penalties, I did fancy the Swiss. I think Sommer was a bit more imposing on that goal than Lloris. Lloris had obviously saved a penalty, but there is always a little bit of doubt around him as well. So I was back in the Swiss when it did go to penalties. I didn't think it would go that far, but as soon as they dropped a 2-goal lead that late on in the match, you have to say that's kind of a typical French thing to do, that they just didn't have the discipline where they needed it.
Like, the strength and depth is something that we've spoken about on this show quite often, and the Italians are one team that have clearly, I guess, exhibited that, and the 2-goal scorers against Austria both off the bench. And again last night, Vladimir Petkovic got his subs exactly right. I'm not saying Switzerland have really deep strength and depth, but you know, it comes down to a manager making the right substitutions at the right time, and Petkovic clearly did that. Like, I know you said you weren't impressed with them against Wales or even in the group stages, but like, could they beat Spain in the next round, or is this the end of their journey?
Oh, they could beat Spain. Spain are very vulnerable. They started to find their shooting boots a bit, but it's just the manner in which they conceded some of those goals, very exposed. Obviously, now you're thinking, are there questions around the goalkeeper? I was happy that Spain actually came through, because I don't think a goalie would have recovered from a mistake like that. I think that really would have affected him going forward. And I was happy, you know, as well for Morata. He comes in for a lot of stick and people are expecting him to be the Benzema or the Harry Kane of Spain, and that's not the guy he is. When he's at Juventus, he's number two to Ronaldo, and I think he'd prefer if he had someone up there. Gone are the days where they have a Raul or someone who's going to get top goal scorer in a big tournament, but he works really hard, so I was happy for him to get his goal. But I definitely think you wouldn't say Croatia are a massively attacking team, and yet they managed to put three past them.
Karen, the thing about Spain as well is the Spanish media again are questioning whether Sergio Ramos should be there, and he was always likely to be the ghost in the room once Spain started to concede some messy goals. But there is a lack of leadership there at the back when you consider probably the starting two for the game at the weekend is likely to be Eric Garcia and Emerick Laporte. Both who have only played a handful of games. In the case of Laporte, you know, he was only able to play for Spain a few days before the tournament started. And then Pau Torres has not got a huge amount of international experience. Okay, he did well with Villarreal this year. But Spain, who for so long were able to rely on having Pique and Ramos as their central defensive partnership, they look shaky in the central defence without Ramos. And this could be one of the things that comes back to haunt Luis Enrique if they concede more sloppy goals.
Well, I think it's madness that he's not there. He's been the best defender over the last 10 years, and yeah, maybe he had a knock and maybe he's this, that and the other, but you look at him on his Instagram every day, he's in incredible shape. You know he's a fantastic leader. He's been able to put up with stick for years. That comes with being a Galactico at Real Madrid, and he takes that on himself, and he would take some of the heat off the likes of Morata, who doesn't seem to be quite able to take it or doesn't have that same leadership quality that they have. And like you say, that they look shaky. They don't have enough experience there at the back. Who's the centre midfield there? Busquets. Without Busquets, yeah. They look even worse. You know, they look like they don't have any solidity in there. And again, you're hoping for individuals to step up, but without a solid defence, and that's where Belgium have probably gotten it right. I know we call them old, but when they're playing well, they're experienced, but they're not conceding goals. You're not looking at them conceding three goals against Croatia. They did cough up some chances against Portugal, but never cut open in the way that Spain have been. And yeah, for me, Ramos absolutely should be there, even if it was for his penalty taking ability. We've seen all the Spanish penalties crumble under that pressure as well. So he would just bring that extra bit of, or just that air of calmness that they don't seem to have. They always look vulnerable.
It's an interesting point you raise about the age of players too, because we saw Pepe at the weekend, I think 38 years of age. Modric, who, when it really mattered for Croatia against Scotland and again yesterday, put in huge performances. Then you look at, you know, that Belgian defence, who were the average age of 32. There was so much focus on, you know, the new breed of players coming through, and we get excited about how they're going to get on in tournament football. But some of the old dogs for the hard road have actually played quite well at this tournament.
Yeah, they definitely have. And I think that's why, it's despite Belgium not firing on all cylinders against Portugal, you would nearly back them. They've got six players probably pushing over 100 caps there, others pushing 90. And they are at that age now. The golden generation are 30, De Bruyne at 30, Hazard 30, Lukaku 28. This is their time to go and do it. The injuries are so unfortunate, because it would be good to see if they can actually bring what we thought they would bring to the tournament in the later stages. It remains to be seen, but it's the older dogs. Ronaldo is always thereabouts. He's ageless. Modric, you're hoping this wasn't the last game we'll get to see him in, because he was still so dominant. Players like that, they're kind of ageless when it comes to tournament football. They can always bring it, and you'd hope maybe Toni Kroos can be that player for Germany tonight, and Thomas Müller. Müller is not young anymore, but we're all talking about the problems that he can cause for that centre-back pairing of, or the three at the back for England tonight.
I had a feeling last night, Karen, that it just wasn't going to be a normal night when that 49-yard back pass from Pedri slipped under the foot of Unai Simon in goal. And, like, ironically, I think David De Gea has been left out of the Spanish goal because they judged him not to be as good with his feet, which it was quite funny to see last night. But, I mean, if you're a midfielder back passing to a keeper, does Pedri take any blame whatsoever here? Like, should you be back passing anywhere but towards the goal, anywhere but with a bit of spin, or is this all on Unai Simon?
I think we're clutching, saying that we can blame the midfielder there. You try and take a bit of the blame away from the goalkeeper, because it was just such a howler. You know, on paper, you always pass it away from the goal. It'll be nice along the ground. But he took his eye off the ball, and that's simple matter of fact. He didn't get his body behind the ball. Everything in those 5 seconds the keeper did wrong. So as much as maybe the pass shouldn't be aimed directly at him, I don't think there's any hiding from that. We'll say he should have had a cap on or something, but I do think he was in the shade even at that point.
It's just because Pedri is 18 and the youngest, I think, youngest outfield player to ever start a Euros knockout match. So I'm just trying to, you know, deflect the attention off the poor kid. But no, it's not going to work. No. Like Emma Hayes on commentary yesterday, like, interestingly, the last 5 minutes, I just had a feeling even on 83, 84 minutes, even with a 3-1 lead, Croatia weren't quite finished. And in those last few minutes, as Emma Hayes put it, they were fractured and pulled apart by Croatia. And you just felt that a goal or two was coming. Certainly big chances were coming. Like, is that something that might stick with Spain and psychologically, I guess, impair them for the remainder of the tournament, knowing that they let a lead slip? Granted, they got through ultimately, but it's not a good sign.
It's not a good sign, and you're in camp, you'll try and forget about that. But more importantly, it's going to give impetus to other teams to really keep going at them. Like, I don't think anyone will be saying, oh, we really need to sit back against Spain. You'll always see that they are vulnerable now. So going forward, I think that, yeah, teams will be starting to go at Spain. It won't be that kind of low block that you'd expect teams to employ against the Spanish. They'll look at the centre backs and look at the inexperience there, and they'll say, right, we have a real chance here. And I think the fear factor is gone from a lot of the teams from what we've seen. It's interesting that I don't think anyone will really fear another team, having watched their last 16 performances. Switzerland, you wouldn't fear them because of who they are. While Belgium, you wouldn't fear them because they didn't show much against Portugal, and Maybe it was De Bruyne going off, but they didn't show any real ambition to get forward. They were very steady, but yeah, I think the fear factor is gone, and hopefully that makes for more games like we saw yesterday.
Karen, can I ask you about Pedri? Because it's good in a way that the game became so manic afterwards, and we probably will forget about that own goal, and it won't be put pressure back onto an inexperienced goalkeeper, Nuno Simon, or onto Pedri as a teenager. But he's 18, as Shane mentioned at this stage. At 17 a year ago, he was playing in the second division in Spain, goes to Barcelona, plays 50-odd games for them this season, has now become a key player within the Spanish side. Invariably, there's just comparisons to Andres Iniesta because of the way that he links up on the left-hand side of that midfield and because of his great close control and passing as well. How impressed or unimpressed have you been by Pedri at this tournament?
I'm very impressed. I mean, you can't underestimate the pressure that playing a major tournament is. We have seen Mbappe, maybe it's the youth that is helping him, because Mbappe was much better in the previous tournament than he was today. He was going to be the main man, and it just didn't work out that way. Whereas Pedri does still seem to be that shining light in that Spanish squad for me. He just shows flashes of like your Iniesta and things like that. And you'd imagine if he played poorly that Spain would struggle. And that's a big thing to say about a young guy like that.
Karen, the big one then tonight, well, there's two games this evening, I guess, but Wembley, 5 o'clock, England, Germany.
Is there really?
I know, apparently there's a game, and apparently they won something in 66 yeah. as well. But, like, where is your head at heading into this match? Because there's been so much talk about Gareth Southgate's team selection, about the Germans and where they're currently at under Jogi Löw. But how do you see this game panning out this evening?
We could be in for another Boar Fest, I think. I don't really understand how you can have someone like Grealish and Sancho not getting enough minutes in my books. He's gone safe at a time where I don't think he really needs to. I don't think this is the German side that they once were. I think the side of the group, they can show a bit more ambition, but he's probably looking at the way Portugal won it in 2016. Set out their stall, weren't amazing to watch, but got the job done in the end. So he's playing the ultimate tournament football, being very, very safe with those two holding midfielders. It'll be an interesting game, probably very tactical, but Germany will be delighted. Imagine Germany going into a quarter final as underdogs. Again, they'll just be delighted with that, and they'll have a point to prove. And you'd imagine that Thomas Müller would be going out with a big smile on his face, like he does, and he'll fancy his chances against Maguire.
Yeah, because Karen, England have been very conservative all tournament. Like, I'm shocked that Jadon Sancho's had to watch on, given the last couple of seasons that he's had, one of the most productive players in Europe. Jude Bellingham, similarly, was brilliant against Manchester City in the Champions League earlier this year. He's young, but he's not getting a chance because they've gone with that double pivot with Rice and Phillips, which is there for protection. And like, given that Southgate likes to play Phil Foden, he's very likely to be, you know, I would imagine picked somewhere in the attack, which means they probably won't go with a very attacking player on the right-hand side. So as a result, before this game even starts, you know that England are setting up conservatively to try and cut down chances for Germany before they even start, which to me seems mad when you consider all the attacking talent that Gareth Southgate actually has at his disposal.
Yeah, I think it is mad. And Portugal were saying they have an abundance of attacking talent, but they went for that double pivot and event. They couldn't break down Belgium as much as they tried. And I'd like to see Germany score first to see how England react and see how they come out of the traps. Phillips has been good. I think he's enough in there. I think he loves Rice now, but I don't know if he's offering enough. I see him kind of behind players a lot. He's pointing at people where to go. But in terms of his contribution to the team, I don't think it's been as big as Phillips. And I think Phillips is strong-minded enough to take on that role himself. He'd probably like to be playing Henderson a bit more, but maybe he doesn't have the minutes in his legs, or you're putting him out knowing he'll only put 60 minutes on the clock for you. And that's maybe not enough, because he might want to defend for 90 minutes. He might want to take that approach for the entire game. So I can't imagine, what is it, probably 300, 400 million on the bench there now, 500 million, who knows how much they're all worth now. But yeah, you're looking at Sancho, United, probably looking to pay 100 million, Grealish, City, 100 million, sitting on the bench. It doesn't make logical sense, really.
Well, Sancho's unlikely to play, and maybe the Germans would welcome the chance to play against Sancho, given that so many of them play against him at club level week on week. But
I think they can't believe that he's not playing.
I'd say they're shocked,
they see him week in, week out. They're delighted, I'd say.
Like, does Saka probably start, given the way that he played the last time against the Czech Republic? Because if they are going to get three at the back, as we kind of suspect, they're the rumours in the English press today, you play Saka down one side and Chilwell down the other. Like, has Saka done enough to merit a start in a knockout game here?
He has the energy, and he was one of the brighter sparks of that, again, boring performance that England have been kind of churning out. I think I would prefer to see someone like Grealish on the pitch, someone who will take players on, bring a bit of difference. Foden, obviously an excellent player, he deserves his place as well, and Kane is undroppable. So I wouldn't be surprised if he got the nod today, but he loves Sterling. He's a safe guy. He doesn't seem to want to rock the boat in any way, and he hasn't been pushed to do that. They've gotten here, they haven't conceded, so he probably would be in for more criticism if he does try and change it. Obviously we saw it didn't work for France yesterday, so he'll stick to the tried and tested.
Karen, it was interesting to listen to Roy Keane on television last night saying the England players might not get this opportunity again. They need to play the game, not the occasion. And then, like, I'm reading some of the quotes from Gareth Southgate here in advance of this game, talking about baggage from previous eras. He says, something we have spoken about over the last 4 years is that this team doesn't carry the baggage from previous eras. Many of them weren't even born when many of those things happened, and it's an irrelevance for them. Like, do you buy that? Do you not think these players are fully aware of the history of the penalty disasters over the years? Like, it's hard to ignore the fact that baggage is something that these players will have to carry into this match tonight.
Yeah, there's always the baggage because they have failed on so many occasions at this hurdle. The Germans have been such a thorn in their side, and I'm not sure that there's quite that strength, that backbone within these young players that they can shoulder something like that either. So as much as, they weren't around, the press is so savage now. They're going to remind them of all of those times. They're going to remind them of the importance of a game like this. They're going to remind them of the history. And you just wonder if, okay, maybe it's not baggage, but that pressure that brings to them might be too much for them.
Gareth Southgate, a lot of the focus has been on him and his team selection, obviously. And I guess we have to reserve some judgment until after tonight, and maybe until we see how they progress in this tournament. But, like, there's the argument that he's the PE teacher wearing the waistcoat, and then from some people he's the England manager who got them to the World Cup semi-finals in 2018 and could do who knows what in this tournament after a very impressive qualification campaign. So do you think Gareth Southgate is unfairly treated in some quarters?
Not really, because he wasn't a massive name coming in. The English job is arguably the biggest international job in the game that there is, and he's done fine. But English, despite no reason for it, expect to win major tournaments. So they've lost out to teams that on paper aren't as good as them. Going out to Germany wouldn't be as savage as going out to the likes of Iceland or losing to Croatia either, but going out at this stage of the tournament would be an absolute disaster. Before the tournament they were winning. As the tournament's gone on, I think the press have taken a little bit of a step back just because they haven't been firing on all cylinders. They're not getting huge goals up, but Gareth Southgate won't mind that because he is employing that tournament football where he just wants to get through games.
In terms of the Germans, Karen, we were talking about them earlier, like, they will definitely relish coming into this where the expectation is on England as opposed to being onto them. There's such a mixed bag, though. Like, think back to Nations League and the friendlies last year where Germany looked rocky, particularly when they were beaten by Spain and conceded 5 goals. At different stages in this tournament, they've looked shaky, where Portugal looked like they could get behind them on the counter-attack. Yet Germany have done enough to get to this point. Like, if you consider even the Hungary game, where a team probably of less maybe mental strength would have went out against Hungary there, Germany found a way to get a result. Against Portugal, they found a way to win, mainly crossing the ball over to the right-hand side of the box. But this German team just have something about them that gives me the impression that they could win an arm wrestle if it ends up being that tonight.
Yeah, they do. You look at Havertz, he's shown that what he can do. I think he's going to be a key for them. Muller, so experienced. Cruz, experienced. And yeah, they have a little bit of vulnerability, we'll say, the way Portugal got in behind them. But you'd imagine they've learned a lot from that. They seem like a team who can take the previous match's learnings and work on them, and they're more adaptable than other teams. Like you say, they can go for the cross and they can go for the short passing game. They do seem to just be able to adapt to the situation that's put in front of them. And while England do have good attacking players, there's nothing there that I think will put the fear of God in them. I don't think Tony Cruz will be looking at Rice and quaking in his boots or anything like that. So I think they'll have a confidence in themselves that they'll be able to overcome this test. And then you've got the likes of Sané, who can turn it on if he wants to. Maybe he's, again, another guy who's a bit hit and miss, but he could be the one to unlock it today. It'll be interesting, the three at the back. I think that Germany will find a way around that. I think that it'll give them more of a chance to dominate in wide areas, and like we saw, they are dangerous from crosses.
And if they're going to get it behind those three at the back and the two that will probably sit in front of them, it's down to clever movement. Who better to have in for clever movement than a fit again Thomas Muller, who'll probably come in, I would think, for Leroy Sané as the only change from the last day?
Yeah, I would bring him in a game like this. I think that any clever bit of movement, he's going to lose Stones and Maguire. I think, again, he's someone who, as gamely as he is, he's got such clever movement that it only takes 5 seconds, he's gone, he's the ball in the back of the net. Or what he does is he brings other players into the game, he makes the players around him better, and I'm not seeing that from Kane. Kane is not, even though he's not playing well himself, he's not the main man, he's not really improving the players around him, whereas I feel like Muller does have that effect on the German team.
Could it be a case, Karen, in any sense that the path to this point in the group stage runs of these two teams could have an impact tonight? Because England are coming in, not cold, but you know, they played Croatia, they were sloggy enough, I guess. They had a tough game against the Scots, an easy enough one against the Czechs. Whereas Germany are coming into this one, you know, after the so-called group of death, you know, a defeat to a good France team, what we thought was a good France team, a good win against Portugal, and then a really tough draw against Hungary. So, like, could England be coming in a little bit colder than Germany to this one? Will that have any impact, do you think?
Possibly, because Germans will have had to look at themselves a lot more than England. Like, they'll have had to look at the defeat that they had to France, they'll have to look at the Hungary game, and they'll have to work on those things. Whereas England, yeah, largely untested, didn't have to try out different things, kind of have coasted their way through a little bit without that big test. So I think that the experience that they've had in this tournament will work in their favour, and England could possibly go the way of the Netherlands. There was a bit of hype about some bit of the play that they had, similar to England. They had some good passages, and we thought, oh, this is what's to come in the knockout stages. And it didn't work out that way. One little slip and the Netherlands imploded. And I think that England would be more liable to follow in that vein than what Germany would.
Finally, Karen, before we let you go, one element we haven't spoken about is the fact that this is in Wembley, 40,000 mostly home fans, I guess, supporting England this evening. But what's your prediction for tonight's match, and then how do you see the tournament progressing from here? Who do you think is going to go all the way?
I have a fear that England could go all the way, and it'll be three more boring games with them. I'm hoping that's not the case. I'd like to see Germany go through. I think it would make for more interesting matchups as we go. I think Belgium, who I had tipped without De Bruyne, Lukaku looks like Man United Lukaku, Hazard. He needs to be firing on all cylinders. They can't be relying on Thorgan Hazard to come up with the goods. So tonight, I hope Germany just scrape it. And overall, I'd like to see Italy do it. I'd like to see Italy do it. I've enjoyed their attacking play. I've enjoyed the fact that they're going for a high press, the way they move the ball, and the fact that I hadn't really paid much attention to them going into this tournament. Belgium were the team I was looking forward to watching the most. and they're matched up now with the team that I've actually enjoyed watching the most. So I think that that'll be a really good game and give us an idea of who the eventual winners could be. I think that whoever comes through the England side of the draw, when it comes to the final, could be a bit shell-shocked because they haven't had the same experience on the tougher side of the group.
Karen, great stuff as always this morning. Thanks a million. Enjoy the football this evening.
You too. Thanks, guys.
Karen Duggan there, the Piedmont United midfielder and former Republic of Ireland international as well. Will, I'll get your thoughts on tonight's two games very shortly. I just want to bring you the Paddy Power markets from today's games. These two games, 5 o'clock and 8 o'clock this evening. Have a quick look.
Well, listeners, a juicy last 16 match. England-Germany at Wembley. On the line, you can see our football trainer, Jason Murphy. We're going to pick the bones on this one. But we better tell our listeners here, Jason, there's a free £5 bet builder bet on this England-Germany game for Paddy Power customers.
That's right. For new or existing customers, a free £5 bet builder for this massive game that we're all looking forward to. I'm going to give you a 4-leg bet builder just as an example. So say England to qualify, it's 3-4. We've seen the drama, Germany, Hungary. They left it to the 84th minute, Germany, to get the job done and get out of the group. England, no such issues coming through. But why England will go off favourites in this game is purely the Wembley factor. So England to qualify at 3-4. Southgate's going to go more defensive. So I'm going to give you Harry Kane to have an assist in the 90 minutes at 9-2. Reason being, England are probably just 3 attacking players. Grealish, Mount, likely to be on the bench. Kane drops deeper like we've seen him do at Spurs, therefore more likely to provide an assist. 9-2, anytime assist in the 90 minutes. If Kane's laying them on a plate, who's going to be finishing them? Raheem Sterling. We're going with him at 4-7 just to have one or more shots on target in the 90 minutes. If you look at his last 18 games for England, he's been involved in 20 goals. 6 assists, scoring 14 of them. He stepped up to the plate. So Sterling to have one or more shots in 90 minutes. And then the last leg I'm going to give you, I'm going to go with under 2.5 goals in 90 minutes at 8-13. Reason being, be informed, the goal rates in the knockout stages of these tournaments drop dramatically. You don't see as many goals as you see in a Premier League game. That's because the drama and tension ramps up. And when teams have leads to hold on to, my God, they fight for their lives to hold on to them and don't go chasing more goals. You have a look at those 4 legs, you put them in the bet builder, it comes to 35-1. So if you use the free fiver bet builder that Paddy Power are giving you, that'd pay £175, which would be nice. But you can do your own bet builder. For people that are interested as well, I know a lot of people are asking, Germany to win on penalties, it's 17-2. England haven't beaten Germany in the knockout since the 1966 World Cup. They've met 3 times since. Germany have won the 3 of them, 2 of them on penalties. But listen, it's going to be a cracking game. And like I say, a free £5 bet builder with Paddy Power first.
Well, listeners, brilliant stuff there from Jason Murphy. England to qualify, a Kane assist, Sterling, one or more shots on target, and under 2.5 goals in your bet builder. Best of luck.
Yeah, 5 o'clock, England, Germany and Wembley. And then 8 p.m, Sweden versus Ukraine. That's at Hampden Park in Glasgow later on this evening. Myself, Jared, Nathan have been doing our predictions well for the duration of the tournament. We'll get the latest in that situation now up on screen. So myself in the lead still, 19 points. Jared's 4 behind on 15. And Nathan creeping behind Jared on 14 points. I've gone for Germany and the two lads have opted for England. So depending on that result this evening, I could run away with it if the Germans take the victory tonight in some way. And all 3 of us have opted for the Swedes to progress and beat the Ukraine this evening. Will, we haven't really touched on the Sweden-Ukraine game. And like, I really like this Swedish team. And Victor Lindelof has been impressive. Alexander Isak up front has been really impressive. They're a solid team. Like, I've only opted for the Swedes because, well, it's Ukraine's first time in a knockout stage of the Euros. Granted, they qualified for this championship's top of their group, ahead of Portugal, in fact, in that group. So they're a decent team under Shevchenko. But I just think the Swedes will nick it. And I think the Swedes could also do some damage to whoever wins this England-Germany match this evening. They could certainly put up a challenge. How are you seeing that match going in Glasgow tonight?
Yeah, the Swedes were quite good in their group. Topped it. They kind of frustrated Spain and were very good at the back in the first game. And then they got the couple of results they acquired after that to finish top of the group. They've been incredibly efficient. I was having a look at the stats. 44% of the chances that Sweden have created at these finals so far, they've taken. So they don't need a huge amount of chances to actually score goals, which will probably be in their favour. Last time these two teams met at a major tournament, Andriy Shevchenko, who's on the sideline for Ukraine, scored both goals when Ukraine beat Sweden back at Euro 2012. It's that long since these two teams have met. As you say, Ukraine have been consistent without ever looking all that good. Like, I think they benefited from drawing a very weak group at this tournament, which they were able to just squeeze out of in the end to set up this tie at Hampden tonight. I would have a fancy towards Sweden to progress. I'm not sure if Sweden are going to be good enough to challenge Germany or England in the next round, but we have had a few surprise results so far, like the Czech Republic beating the Dutch at the weekend, like Switzerland last night. And when it comes to knockout football, where now at this point, there's probably no great standout team left. And that's the great thing about these European championships, which have made them so exciting, is that this side of the draw gives hope to every team that's now going through to the last eight, particularly on this half of the draw, you know, with the Czechs and the Danes on this side too, that realistically you could have an unusual finalist getting through or somebody getting to a high-profile semi-final, maybe even for the first time in their history. But I think on the face of it, Sweden unbeaten so far in 2021, the seven games that they've played so far between the qualifiers for the World Cup, the warm-up games, and now at the Euros themselves, they've not been beaten. If you were to take it on form at the tournament so far, you'd have to probably opt for Sweden. But really, this is a difficult one to call. Like, neither really an outstanding team, but yet neither of them have played too poorly at the tournament so far. Probably just give a narrow edge towards Sweden going into it. But despite the fact that all the fun and all the hype is probably about the first game, I'm actually quite looking forward to watching this one tonight.
Yeah, it's going to be brilliant. 5 o'clock can't come quick enough, and then 8 o'clock can't come soon enough after that. So, Will, great stuff as always this morning. Enjoy the football today, and here's hoping it's half as good as the action last night.
I do like you didn't ask me for a prediction on England against
Germany. I felt like it was you were leaning towards the Germans earlier. Am I right or am I wrong?
I really fancied England to go deep into this tournament before it started, but you can't but look at the evidence of what we've seen so far and think that England have been disappointing. So unless England can step up their game tonight, I think the Germans can come raid and set themselves up for a trip to Rome at the weekend. If England play the way that they should be able to play, England will qualify and England will be well set up to get to the semi-finals. But I'm losing a little bit of faith with them every time I've seen them so far, and I think Germany might just edge it. Yeah,
it feels like a big time 50-50 game, but I can't wait for the build up. And then if England lose, I will be switching on ITV straight away to see what they're all saying, because it's always gold, I think, to watch them when they exit a major tournament. Iceland at 2016.
Shane Hannan is mad for a bit of Ali McCoist and Clive Tilsley as well. The real stars of this tournament. Forget about Cristiano Ronaldo, forget about Pogba. Ali McCoist has been the find of the tournament.
Big time. Look, Sam Matterface does a grand job, but Clive Tilsley is just outstanding. And Ali McCoist beside
him. It gave last night a big match feel, Shane. It kind of felt like you were watching the Champions League in the late 90s or the early 2000s. Clive is just brilliant at these big occasions. And when the penalties were coming around, there's no other commentator you would have wanted to actually be on them. And then Ali adds so much because of his natural excitement about everything that's happening. They are the duo that we didn't think we needed in our lives. Like, Kenny Cunningham and George Hamilton have been great on RTE2. They've been my second favourite commentary team, but there's nobody touching Ali and Clive.
Oh, and Clive's a gentleman too. George Hamilton's a gentleman as well. They're all gentlemen, but like, even at 9 o'clock when Love Island was coming on, and Clive was like, please stick with us, don't switch over to Love Island, swipe right for Ali McCoist, I was thinking, these guys are, I'm in love with these guys. It was just excellent. Like, I'm not a Martin Tyler fan necessarily. I think he doesn't give the big goals the big oomph anymore that he used to. And Clive,
except for Aguero,
except for Aguero, but Clive really, really does it. And last night, as you said, added a bit of drama to the whole thing. But listen, I cannot wait for this evening. Will, great stuff as always. Thanks many for that today.
Cheers, Sam.
Will O'Callaghan, our own Will O'Callaghan there on the Euro 2020 show, which, as I mentioned, is in association with Paddy Power's Save Our Game, donating €10,000 to Irish football for every goal England score at the Euros. So if England do nab a couple tonight, that's €10,000 per goal in the kitty for Irish football. So another reason to watch this evening's game at 5 o'clock. If you did miss any of the show today, the full podcast, as always, will be up very shortly on the OTB Sports app. It'll also be up on otbsports.com. And you can watch the show back as well, youtube.com/offtheball. And as usual, we'll have loads of clips and best bits from the show up on our Twitter and Instagram @offtheball, and myself on Twitter as well @ShaneHannan01. I'll be back on Friday morning. So we've rest days, of course, in the Euros tomorrow, Wednesday, and indeed on Thursday. So we'll be back Friday morning, 11 a.m. in the company of Eamon Dunphy, once again, as we look ahead to the quarterfinals. So can't wait for that. So same time, same place, Friday morning. Try and find something to do in the meantime, the next couple of days. Maybe get a bit of fresh air. Leave the football for a couple of days, relax, enjoy it, and listen, we'll speak to you on Friday morning, same time as always here on the Euro 2020 show. Have a good one.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power's Save Our Game. England's goals total 20k so far for Irish football. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
The OTB Podcast Network with Get Set Go. Black Box Car Insurance lets young drivers bounce past high-cost premiums. Drive safe and save more with GetSetGo.ie.